All right. So we
not all of them actually some have mistakes.
All right. So we are holding on your days on the days top line. We quoted a braisa that describes. So we quoted a braisa that
you'd
base on the base, top line. And we quoted a braisa that described
the base on the,
on the base.
On the base.
Yeah. Which quoted a braisa that described the scenario when, right before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, that we said it was a Sunday. It was the Mishmar of Yehoyarib, which is the first of the 24 Mishmaris. That was the first year of Shemitah. The Levim are standing on the Duchan and singing. Koyanim and Levim, it says, are standing on the Duchan and singing, and they're singing the end of Kapitel Tzadik Das. And then the enemies invaded the Beis Hamikdash. That was by the first one, and also, and the same thing by the second one. So yesterday we discussed
the same,
well, the Gemara is going to discuss now whether it means all the same details, or whether it means maybe only some of them, but we'll figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we discussed yesterday the question, how does it work out that the Churban by Srishan was in the year after Shemitah? And we brought various psukim in that regard, and we figured out it does work. The 14th year after the Churban, counting the Churban itself as year zero, was a Yovel. Therefore, the first Churban itself was 14 years earlier, which was a Yovel was the year after a Shemitah, and so the year after the Churban, the year of the Churban was also a Shemitah. So now
two times seven,
right. So now the Braisa said b'chein b'shniyah, the same thing happened when the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So the question is, b'shniyah b'mitzvah shviyas min hashkafa. How does it work out that the Churban Bayis Sheni could have been in a mitzvah shviyas, in the first year of a Shemitah cycle? Let's figure it out. Mechti, let's consider. Bayis Sheni kamakom, how long did the second Beis Hamikdash stand for? Arba Meir of Estrim, it stood for 420 years. Well, like this. We know, according to the Chachamim, now we're going to discuss now, when we've discussed in Abu Zara also, we've discussed it in various places in Shas, you have the opinion of the Chachamim and you have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda about how Shemitah and Yovel years are distributed. According to the Chachamim, the Yovel year, we know is the 50th year, everybody agrees to that, the Chachamim hold that interrupts the Shemitah count. Meaning, according to the Chachamim, so you have seven Shemitahs, the 49th year is Shemitah, 50th year is Yovel. That year does not belong to any Shemitah cycle. The next year after that is the first year of a Shemitah, and therefore the next Shemitah would be in year 57. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Yovel year is also the beginning of the next cycle of Shemitahs. So therefore, according to him, the next one is 56. So over time, Rabbi Yehuda's Yovel gets ahead of the Chachamim's Yovel by 2 years every century. So now, first,
it's 1 year every 7 years.
Well, it's one year every 50 years.
Every 50 years.
So 2 years every century.
Two
years every century. According to the Chachamim, in other words, that if we take a certain year as the beginning of the count, then the Yovel is going to be in year 50, 100, 150, 200, etc. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, the first Yovel is going to be in year 50, but the second one is going to be in year 99, and the third one is going to be in year 148, and so on and so forth. So it keeps that right. So let's first start according to the Chachamim. So the Bayis Sheni stood for 420 years. So let's divide that down. Arba Meir comes out to Tmanya Yovel. 400 years equals 8 Yovelos, because 50 years in a Yovel cycle. So eight such cycles make 400 years. Arbasre Treshua. Then you have another 14 years make up 2 Shemitah cycles. Parshal Hushis. So you come up with a remainder of 6. Havel Hushita Shavua. So you come out, therefore, that the Churban would have been in the 6th year of the Shemitah cycle. Now, actually, Rashi over here,
420
divided by 50 leaves you 20. Divide that 20 into 7, and you get a remainder of 6. So then in that case, it would have been the 6th. Now, Rashi makes the point over here, and Tosfos also, that the Churban was not actually in the 420th year. It was actually in the 421st year, meaning that the Bayis Sheni stood for 420 complete years. And then it was into the 421st year, and then it was destroyed on Tisha B'Av of that year. So therefore, so Rashi and Tosfos both explain over here, when the Gemara is asking that you have a remainder of 6, the point is not that it would have been in the year before Shemitah, which would be the 6th year, but rather it would have been in the year of Shemitah itself. But in other words, so again, 421 divided by 50 gives you 21. 21 divided by 7 equals 3, no remainder, so then it would have been in a Shemitah year. The Rambam actually has a different understanding of the matter. The Rambam understands that the churban bayis she, and in fact, Rashi himself in Avodah Zarah takes the view that the churban was in the 420th year. Tosfos argues with Rashi over there. The Rambam apparently also takes the view that the churban was in the 420th year.
So the Rambam and Rashi
in Avodah Zarah understand that it was the 420th year. Rashi over here and Tosfos over here and also Tosfos in Avodah Zarah say it was the 421st. Because he may have rewrote his Pirush at different times and he may have changed his mind at some point.
Tosfos
apparently is always saying that it was the 421st. And this, by the way, when we learned this in Avodah Zarah, we talked about how this whole thing affects the question of when the Shemitah is nowadays. Because depending what year we place the Churban in, whether we say it was the 420th or 421st, and how we equate it with the years as we count them nowadays, results in several different opinions among Rishonim how to count what year is Shemitah nowadays. Okay, anyway.
Which opinion do we hold?
Well, we hold by the Rambam. We hold, so the Rambam writes, in principle, the halacha is like the Chachamim, that the Yovel interrupts the Shemitah count. However, he says the Gaonim and the people of Eretz Yisrael have a Masorah that when the Beis Mikdash is standing, when the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, rather, then you don't do that. You don't count Yovels at all. You only count Shemitah. Every seventh year is Shemitah. And given the calculation that the Rambam gives over there, we follow that calculation. And so it's always every seventh year without a break. There's never a time when you have 8 years. So that would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. So the Rambam writes, even though technically the halacha ought to be like a chachamim, but nevertheless, Misoda is a powerful thing. And if the Bnei Eretz Yisrael have an ongoing Misoda for hundreds of years, that this is how they do it, then we have to respect that. So we accept that halacha. Okay. So getting back to our Gemara over here then, so the Churban was in the sixth year or in the seventh year or whatever, how does it come out to be the year after Shemitah? The answer is Homani Rabbi Hode. The answer is, you can say this Braisa that we quoted before, that we said, where we mentioned that it was the year after Shemitah by both the first and the second Churban, we could say Rabbi Hode. We could say that follows the opinion of Rabbi Hode. Where again, Rabbi Hode says the 50th year is also the first year of the next Shemitah and Yovel cycle. So again, according to him, the first Yovel is going to be in the year 50, but the next Yovel after that is going to be in year 99, not year 100, as the Chachamim would say. So therefore, I see Tzmanya B'Tzmanya Yovli. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have 8 extra years to work with, because you have 8 Yovel cycles during the time of the second Beis Mikdash.
Bahani,
during 400 plus years, yeah, you have 8 Yovels. You have 8 Yovels, Vahani Shif, and then you have the 6 extra years that we mentioned before. In other words, before we were doing the calculation, we're taking 420, dividing it by 50, and then taking whatever we have less than 50 and dividing it by 7. Now we're saying, according to Rabbi Yehuda, never mind that. Just divide 420 by 7. Just divide 420 by 7, and therefore and the result is Haviyar Beis. So you have 8 extra years that he has over the Chachamim. According to him, in other words, 8 Yovel cycles, according to him, in other words, are not 400 years, but rather 392 years in the 49 times 8. Then you have another 28 years, or to put it in terms of the Gemara, you have the 8 extra years that he has over the Chachamim, because 392 compared to 400. We have the remainder of 6 that we were mentioning before, because 414 to 420. Haviyar Beisas, you end up with 14. Good. Ishtak after Metzoy Shvias Chorobs. So it comes out that it was destroyed in a Metzoy Shvias, like we wanted. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, plain and simple, all we do is we take the number 420, divide it by 7, we find there's a remainder of or rather 421, because according to Rashi and Tosfos and our Sugya over here, it was destroyed in the 421st year. 421 divided by 7 gives you a remainder of 1. Yeah. So therefore, so 60 times 7 is 420, and you have, yeah. So therefore, so it comes out that it was in Metzoy Shvi. The problem with that is, the Gemara says, E Rabbi Yehuda, okay, but if you're going to tell me this, Brai says, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Barishona Lamashkachasla, then it wouldn't work out when it comes to the first Beis Mikdash. Remember, the Brai said that when the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed, it was also Metzoy Shmita. According to Rabbi Yehuda's calculation, that wouldn't work. Why not? The Tanya. We learn in a Brai said like this. Shiva Osir Yovos Monu Yisrael Mishinichnus of Oret Vacha Yotzu. The Jewish people counted 17 Yovos from when they entered Eretz Yisrael under the leadership of Yeshua until they were exiled, until they left the land after the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed. What it is actually, so Rashi makes the calculation. You have that the first Beis Mikdash was built 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that means 440 years after they entered Eretz Yisrael, because they spent 40 years in the Midbar. It stood for 410 years. 440 plus 410 equals 850. 850 divided by 50 is exactly 17. However, continues the Braisa, the iyata yocholoyma mishal shenichnasu manu. Well, no, second. The iyata yocholoyma mishal shenichnasu manu. Now, though, continues the Braisa, it's impossible to say that the very first year when they entered Eretz Yisrael, right from there they began the count of Shemitah and Yodlus, which would mean, in other words, if we thought that way, we would say, yeah, the 50th year they were there was the first Yovel, the 100th year was the second Yovel, et cetera, and the 850th year, which would be the year of the Churban, was the 17th Yovel. But you can't say that. She'imata oimokain, because if you're going to say that, nimta bayis chorev the tchilas Yovel, then it comes out that the Beis HaMikdash, which is the first Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed at the beginning of a Yovel cycle, or actually it actually says, technically what that would mean is in the Yovel year itself. In the Yovel year itself, the Iyata Moitza Ba'aba Esr Shana Achara Shevokta'ir. We learned on Amud Aleph, we mentioned about the dating of the Nevuah of Yechezkel, of the third Beis Mikdash, where it's dated B'Rosh Hashanah Ba'osu L'Chodesh, which means that it was a Yovel year, because only a Yovel year has its Rosh Hashanah on the 10th of Tishrei. And we said that that was the 14th year after Yerushalayim had been destroyed. So you couldn't, if the year of the Churban itself was a Yovel, then you wouldn't have another Yovel 14 years later. So it wouldn't work out.
We would have a Yovel 50 years later.
Yeah, so then in that case, his dating would be 36 years old. Yeah, something's wrong. Ella, so no, how do we figure it out? Say mehem sheva shekibshu v'sheva shechilku. What you have to do is, from the 850 years that the Jewish people spent in Eretz Yisrael, you have to deduct from that the 7 years that they spent conquering Eretz Yisrael, and another seven that they spent dividing up Eretz Yisrael among the Shevatim and among the families. And so that's 14 years altogether. Not out of the 420, not as the second business. We're talking about the first business. Now we're dealing with out of 850 years. 850 years passed from when they entered Eretz Yisrael until the Churban Bayis Rishon, when they were exiled from it. 850. So now we're subtracting 14 from it, and we have 836. And therefore, v'atam moitza v'aba esr shana achar shehuk sa'ir. Good. Well, then 14 years later is 850 years since they finished settling and since they hook something that was struck, meaning it was destroyed. So then it works out. If you have that the Churban was in year 836, then 14 years later is year 850. That divides evenly by 50. So in other words, that vision of Yechezkel's was 864 years after they had entered Eretz Yisrael, 850 years after they had, so in other words, 850 plus 14. Those 14 were not counted towards the Shemitah and Yovel cycle because they didn't begin the Shemitah and Yovel cycle until they had conquered the majority of Eretz Yisrael and divided it up among the Shevatim and among the individual, into individual family plots and all. Once they did that, now it's true, by the way, so can describe there were still parts of Eretz Yisrael that still needed to be conquered. And the Jewish people didn't end up conquering them. So that's the thing. Basically, at that point, most of Eretz Yisrael was conquered and divided after those 14 years.
Yeah.
How much of it? Most? I don't know, but a substantial part of it, enough that they were able to divide even the parts that were unconquered. They divided up. They said to each shave, it was told, you are assigned this portion of Eretz Yisrael, and now it's going to be your job to clear it out of the remaining Canaanim. And the first chapter of Shoftim describes which Shevatim did do a good job of it, which Shevatim did not do a good job of it. Unfortunately, most of them didn't. But anyway, then it works out. So then it works out that Yechezkel's vision is in fact in a Yovel year.
Now, they didn't do a good job after they start counting.
Because at that point, again, once they finished those 14 years, most of Eretz Yisrael had been conquered, and all of it had been divided among the Shevatim. It would be like, you know, Think of it a little bit like in modern terms. You know, you have families, let's say, for example, that lived in Germany or Poland or what have you, you know, before the war, and they officially own a certain piece of property, you know, they owned it before the war. But now you have, you know, some Polish or German or whatever goyim are living in it, right? They don't have actual, you know, they have legal rights to it. They don't have practical rights to it, right? So here it was the same kind of thing. They have legal rights to this land. They own it legally, but the Canaanim or whoever are still occupying it, and therefore they have to get rid of it. Okay. Anyway, so all of that braisa only works out according to the Chachamim. So according to the Chachamim, and again, in other words, you have 836 years to work with. So again, do the same kind of calculation as before. 836 divided by 50 gives you 36. So 16 complete Yovel cycles and 36 years into the 17th. 36 divided by 7 is remainder 1. So therefore, you have it was the first year. But the year of Yehuda, but if you're going to tell me this Braisa is a coincidence of Yehuda, which we were saying before in order to make the calculation with the second Churban work, well then, again, a coincidence of Yehuda, Yovel is only every 49 years, not every 50. Therefore, Aiti Shibsirei Mishibsirei Yovli. So you have to add, according to Rabbi Yehuda, another 17 years, one for each Yovel. In other words, according to him, 17 Yovel cycles would not take 850 years. As the Chachamim would say, it would take 833 years.
17 Yovel cycles
are 49 years each. 17 times 49 equals 833. So therefore, Shadi Ahani, add the 17 years to what we were describing so far, Havale, the plus of the Shavua. So what do you end up with? If according to the Chachamim, the year of the Korban was the 36th year of the Yovel cycle, then according to the Yehuda, it would be the 53rd year. 36 plus 17, which means, in other words, it would be the third year of a new Yovel cycle. So according to the Yehuda, the Korban would have been in the third year of a Yovel cycle, not right after a Shemitah. And for that matter, according to him, the whole calculation from Yechezkel wouldn't work either, because you're not going to have a Yovel 14 years later. So obviously, in other words, that Braisa cannot be according to Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is not necessarily, the Gemara says, because you could say like this: Hanach Shni Da'agrinu Sancherev Ad Osa Yumiya Adrinu. Because there's like this: we know that the Aseres HaShvatim were taken into Golos by Sancherev. Actually, the Pasuk actually mentions in this connection Tiglas Pileser, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that Sancheirev had many names, and one of them is Tiglas Pileser. The historical inscriptions and whatever that they found from the Assyrian kings is show that apparently these are different kings, but Sancheirev and Tiglas Pileser and whatever are all different Assyrian kings. But in our tradition, in the Gemara, we assume that they're all the same person. One explanation I've seen is that maybe what it is Sancheirev was the one who came up with this policy of resettling conquered nations in different territories like they did with the Aseres HaShavatim and the Kusim, and therefore the whole project is called by his name even when Tiglas Pileser or somebody else was the actual king on the throne. Whatever it is, anyway, the point is, so from when Sancheirev took them into Golos, Ad Osa Yumiya Adrinu, until almost 100 years later, or maybe over 100 years later, whatever, Yumiyahu brought many people from the Aseres HaShavatim back. Yeah, Rashi says over 90 years, from Chizkiyahu's times until Yoshiyahu's times, when Yumiyahu brought many of the Aseres HaShavatim back. So Loi Kachoshev Lahu, those years are not being counted. Now, what does that mean? First of all, okay, Rashi brings a girsa that his Rebbeim had, and Rabbeinu Gershom also has, Tosfos also discusses it over here, that the original girsa in the Gemara over here was the 3 years, Hanach Tlas Shnin Da'agrinu Sancheirev, meaning, in other words, that the Pasuk describes in Malachim that when Sancheirev finally came to conquer the remainder of the Aseres HaShvatim, so there had already been several waves of Golos before that. First, he had taken Reuben and Gad and Hatishev and Manasseh. After that, some of the other Shvatim, Naphtali and Zvulun and whatever. Three times. Each time he took some of the Shvatim. Each time he took some of the Shvatim. First Reuben and Gad and Hatishev and Manasseh. After that, Naphtali and then Asher and I think Zvulun, and then the rest of them. Each one, he exiled them to Chalach, the Chover, now goes in the Ore Madai. Each one 8 years apart.
He was a Parsi?
No, he was the king. He was the emperor of Assyria. He was the king of Assyria.
He was a Babylonian.
No, Assyria is north of Babylon. It's northern Iraq. Babylonia is southern Iraq. Okay. Think of like, for example, Nineveh, their capital was near Mosul nowadays. So like if you look at a map, Mosul was in northern Iraq. Okay. Anyway. The point is, so the girsa that Rashi first brings over here from his Rebbeim is that what the Gemara is proposing to do is like this. It describes in the Pasuk that when Sancheirev or Tiglath Pileser or whoever it was exactly, when he came to finally do the last exile of the Aseres HaShvatim, he besieged the city of Shomron, which is the capital city, for 3 years, and then he finally conquered it and took them all into exile. So therefore, the proposal of the Gemara is to subtract those 3 years. And if you subtract those 3 years from the count, then you're back to the Korban will have been in the first year of a Yovel, like the Braisa said. However, Rashi says, I don't like that girsa for a lot of reasons. Among others, just because they're besieging the city, what does that mean? Therefore, we suspend the count of Shmittas and Yovels because he's besieging the city. What does one have to do with the other? And also, the fact of the matter is, once Shevet Reuven and Gad had been taken into exile, which is a few years before that, then already the Yovel stopped. So why all of a sudden would we be attributing it to 3 years? Yeah, because the Yovel only applies when Kol Yeshveh Aleh, when all or most of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael. By that time, you didn't have that. So therefore, for all those and a lot of other reasons, Rashi says that I can't accept that girsa. So Rashi rather says what the Gemara means is like this. According to the Chachamim, even during the period after Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe were taken into Golos, even after that, you still have to count Yovel. Fine, Yovel itself is not an effect. You don't have to free the Avodim, because you can't, because you don't have a Kol Yeshvei Olam. However, given that according to the Chachamim, the count of Shmittis is interrupted every 50 years by a Yovel, it's called Monu Yovel Sakadish Shmittin. They had to count Yovels, not insofar as they're going to actually be observing Yovel, but just insofar as that there comes a point that, otherwise we're going to mess up the Shmittah count. So according to the Chachamim, they would have had to do that even after the Aseret HaShavatim were taken into Golos. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, that Shnasa Chamishim Olo L'Kan L'Kan, that according to him, Yovel does not interrupt the Shemitah cycle. So according to him, once the Aseret HaShavatim were taken into Golos, from then until Yirmiyahu went and brought many of the Aseret HaShavatim back and Yeshayahu ruled over them, during that period, according to him, there was no reason to count Yovel. So therefore, when Yirmiyah went in the times of Yeshayahu, Hashem told him to go to where the Aseret HaShavatim had been taken into Golos and bring many of them back. And he did. At that point, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they restarted the count of Yovels. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they'd been counting counting Shmittas and Yovels every 7th year of Shmittah and every 49th year of Yovel from when they finished conquering and dividing out Israel. But then they suspended the count of Yovels once the Aseret HaShavatim were taken into Golos. And from then on, they're only counting Shmittas. Now, only according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to the Chachamim, they wouldn't have been observing Yovel during that 90 or 100 years, but they had to count it. Yeah, that's the thing. According to Rabbi Yehuda, they wouldn't have counted them at all because it doesn't matter as far as the years anyway. But once Yirmiyahu brought these people from the Aseret HaShavatim back, and now there are members of all 12 Shvatim in Eretz Yisrael, and we can therefore call it Kol Yeshvei Olam, then they restarted the count. Now, if we calculate from then, that took place in the 18th year of Yoshiyahu's reign. So then you have from there like this. You have Yoshiyahu ruled for 31 years. You're actually giving the calculation. Yoshiyahu ruled for 31 years. So that gives you another 13 years. Then you had Yehoyachaz for 3 months. So then you had Yehoyakim for 11 years. Yechoniah for 3 months. And Tzidkiyahu for 11 years. So leaving aside the months, then you have 13 and 11 and 11. 13 and 11 is 24, and another 11 is 35.
13, 11,
and 11 is 35, and then with the extra month that you have over there, there's your 36th year, and there you go. So it comes out, it works out. That year of Yoshiyahu, that year is when they declared they declared that year a Yovel, because the Aseret HaShavatim were back. That was also the year when they found the famous Sefer Torah in the Beis Mikdash, and Yoshiyahu began a massive program of tshuva and cleaning up of Adizara in Eretz Yisrael.
So that was
the last Yovel before the Churban. That was 36 years before the Churban. That was the 36th year before the Churban. And therefore, it works out according to Rabbi Yehuda as well. Okay, so that's the answer. All the years from when Sancheirev took them into Golos, ad to also Yirmiyahu Adrinu, until Yirmiyahu grew up the Aseret HaShavatim back, like a Choshev, we're not counting them, according to Rabbi Yehuda, towards the Yovel cycle. When he brought them back, they started a new Yovel cycle, and that was 36 years before the Churban, and therefore the Churban took place in Motzei Shmita like we wanted. So we could make the Braisa work according to Rabbi Yehuda. We could say when it comes to the first Churban, we would say that the count of Yovels was interrupted for about 90 years. And when it comes to the second Churban, we don't even need that. We would say 421 divided by 7 equals 421 divided by 7 gives us a remainder of 1, and therefore it comes out it was Matzoi Shmita.
421,
because the coins are actually divided by 7. Yeah, divided by 7 gives you a remainder of 1. So with the first Beis Mikdash, we would say like this. It's true we have 836 years, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, 836 doesn't give you a remainder of 1 when you're dividing it by Shmittas, but you have to realize that there was a period of about 90 years when the Yovels were interrupted, and then they restarted them in Yoshiyahu's time. And when it comes to the second Churban, you don't need any of that. You just divide 421, because again, according to Rashi and Tosfos in Arsovia, the Churban was in the 421st year of the Bais Sheni. 421 divided by 7 gives you a remainder of 1. So there you go. It was in the first year. Okay, so that's one way of understanding the Braisa. The e-boise, or another answer, you could say, la'olam rabbanon, we could say that the Braisa is actually going according to the Chachamim. We asked in that case, wouldn't it come out the Churban Bayis Sheni was in the sixth year or the seventh year of Shmita and not in Matzoi Shmita? So by the way, as far as the Rambam's opinion, by the way, the Rambam understands it, and he writes this both in the Tshuva of his and in Yad HaChazakah, as far as the Bayis Sheni, I think in the Tshuva he also refers to the Bayis Yishin, he says the Churban actually was in a Shmita year. The reason why the Gemara here speaks of it being after a Shemitah year is because one was the Churban in Av, which is close to the end of the year. So the first, the, no, but in other words, the first, in other words, if we count the year of the Churban itself as year zero, year one of the era of the Churban is Matzoi Shemitah. Therefore, the Gemara can refer to it as it took place in Matzoi Shemitah, even though it was actually a month and a half left to go of the Shemitah year. That's how the Rambam holds. Rashi and Tosfos over here don't understand it that way. They understand at face value that it means it was the first year of the Shemitah cycle.
Not
the year before Shemitah. But again, not the year of Shemitah. But again, we follow the Rambam's view of Lahalocha because we say, therefore, when it comes to the Bais Sheni, we say that the last Shemitah, the year that of the Churban, which again, according to the Rambam, was a Shemitah year, was the year 3829. And from that, we count every 7 years, and therefore, if we count by seven, we end up with the last Shemitah year that we had, which was Tavshin Ayin Hei, 5775. But if you divide, so then it fits. According to Rashi and according to Tosfos, Shemitah might be a year or two earlier. Okay. Anyway. Okay, so another answer you can say is the Braisa does go according to the Chachamim. You don't have to use specifically Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that the Yovel does not interrupt the Shemitah count. And therefore, so with the first Beis Hamikdash, it works out very easily because it was in the 836th year, and 836 comes out the first year of a Shemitah. What about the second Beis Hamikdash? We ask that 420 or 421 divided according to the Chachamim doesn't come out in the year after a Shemitah. The answer is b'chikatoni b'chein b'shnia. Okay, but when the Braisa says that so it was, when it comes to the second Beis Hamikdash, ashara, it means some of the other details that it's mentioning. The fact that it was Tisha B'Av, the fact that it was Sunday, not necessarily is the Braisa saying that every single detail was the same thing. Maybe according to the Chachamim it wasn't Matzoi Shemitah.
They didn't have to distribute the land the second time.
No. Okay, so the question, and in fact, the Gemara says, Halchinami Mistabra. Yeah, in fact, it seems logical to say that the Braisa is not necessarily saying that all these details were the same by the first Churban and by the second Churban. The Eloi Temahachi, because otherwise, if you're not going to say like that, you have to ask one of the details.
If
you're going to say that all the details were the same, that it was Sunday, and it was Tisha B'Av, and it was the Mishmar of Yoyariv, et cetera, well then, Mishmarto Shah Yoyariv, Bashniya Mihaboy, was there a Mishmar of Yoyariv when it came to the second Bismarck? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, arba mishmaris olam min agola, only four mishmaris of Kohanim came up from the Golos in the times of Ezra, or actually a few years before Ezra. So the Pasuk list in Sefer Ezra, and again in the Nehemiah portion of Ezra, it lists all the families of Bnei Yisrael and of the Kohanim and Levim and the Sinim and what have you, and it lists only four families of Kohanim that came up. Yedaiah v'chorim pashkor v'imer, out of 24. So what do? We need to have 24 mishmaris.
There are 24 families.
There were 24 families which formed the 24 mishmaris in the first business. Only four of them came back. Only four came back, right?
The others
stayed in Babel. The others stayed in Babel. It looks like in general, the majority of the Jewish people stayed in Babel. Only 42,000 and some Jews came up to Eretz Yisrael. So what do? They need to have 24 mishmaris. Under Nevi'im Shebeneim, so the Nevi'im who were among them, Chagas, Chariah, and Malachi, arose. They redivided these four families into 24. So in other words, you're going to have fewer people in each mishmar for the time being until the others come back or until they eventually grow in size from natural increase. Then what they did is they said, okay, but how do we order them? Who goes first? Who goes second? So they write down the names of the new mishmaris on pieces of paper parchment, whatever, bolum, they mixed them up, the nosnum bakalpi, and they put them into a box to draw lots. Bo Yedaya, so Yedaya comes first, so the leader of Yedaya's family, the notochelka, and he takes his portion, the chelek chaverav, and the portions of his colleagues, sheish, which comes out to six. So Rashi explains it was Ruach HaKodesh, that when he picked out one of the lots over there, it was the one that said Yedaya. And then he took out, then Bashkacha Pratis with Ruach HaKodesh, he took out the next one, which was also one of the sub-families of, that Yedaya had now been divided into.
Why did you think the other one, the next one?
No, that's the point. In other words, because what we're doing is we're saying Yedaya is now being divided into six smaller mishmaris.
Oh, I see.
And the same thing, Chorim is being divided into six. And so, by the way, Yedaya, Chorim, and Imer are all names that we find in Divrei Hayamim of the names of mishmaris. Tashchur we don't find as one of the original mishmaris from the times of the first Beis Hamikdash. So the Marsha mentions, we know from Pesukim and Yirmiyah, that there was a Pashur in Yirmiyahu's time. Maybe it refers to him. Maybe he grew to be a very large family. Other Acharonim talk about not necessarily because that particular one was a Rasha. They wouldn't have named a Mishmar after him, whatever. So there's a different Pashur that's mentioned in Ezra and in Divrei Yomim. So maybe it's him. Anyway, whatever it is. So Yedaya comes, and with Ruach HaKodesh, he picks out the lot that says Yedaya, and then he picks out the next one, which also is one of the six lots that his family had been divided into, and so forth, and that establishes the order. Now we're going to have, let's say, Yedaya number one, Yedaya number two, Yedaya number three, etc., whatever their new names are going to be. Then Chorim does the same thing. That's the second family. So now from them is going to be Mishmar 7 through 12. V'chein Pashur, v'chein Immer. And the same thing, Pashur did the same thing, and Immer did the same thing, and there's your 24 Mishmaris.
Pashur, we don't have the name.
There's a list of the 24 Mishmaris in Divrei Yomim from the first Beis Hamikdash. Pashur is not one of the names. But apparently Immer is, and Chorim is, and Yedaya. So apparently this Pashur was a family that had grown from within one of the other families that by now was large enough to constitute a family of its own. Whatever. Anyway, so... And Rashi adds that the family of Yehoyariv, Rashi says, never ended up coming from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. So there was no Mishmar called Yehoyariv in the second Beis Hamikdash. Tosfos says, I don't know who says, maybe at some point later they came up. Nevertheless, though, Tosfos says, the fact is, given what the Gemara is going to say now, there wasn't a named Mishmar named Yehoyariv. Even if people from Yehoyariv did end up coming back, they didn't form a new named Mishmar Yehoyariv, because the Gemara continues, Iskinu Nevi'im Shebeinehem, the Nevi'im of that time, Chagai, Chari, and Malachi, and I guess the other members of Anshkinet Sagdola, made a takana, Shafilu Yehoyariv Rosh Mishmaris Ola, even if at some future time Yehoyariv, who in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash was the first Mishmar, even if they eventually come up from Babel to Israel, Lo Yedocha Yedaya Memkaimai, Yedaya, who was originally in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, the second Mishmar, they're not going to be pushed out of their place, because Yedaya deserves credit, because they came up and Yehoyariv didn't. Elo Yedaya Iker, Yedaya will remain the main one, but Yehoyariv Tofel Lo, and Yehoyariv will be secondary to them. So like Rashi in Tainus explains that maybe what they'll do is, okay, they'll give Yehoyariv a slot, but they'll redivide Yedaya into five Mishmaris rather than six, because you have more than 24. But the point is, Yehoyariv will never be the first Mishmar again. Over here, Tosfos explains that what it is that there wouldn't be a named Mishmar of Yehoyariv anymore. Any people of Yehoyariv would have to join one of the other Mishmaris because they're penalized for the fact that they didn't come up. So therefore, the point is, in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, there's no Mishmar called Yehoyariv. So how can the Braisa before say that there were all the details by the first and the second Churban, including that there was a Mishmar of Yehoyariv? El Ashara. Obviously, the Braisa must be referring to all the other details. So by the same token, we can say that also when the Braisa mentions that the first Churban and the second Churban were in the year after a Shemitah, maybe not necessarily. Maybe only the first Churban was, and the second Churban wasn't. So that could work according to the Chachamim also. We started by asking the question, according to the Chachamim, how does it work out mathematically that it was a year after the Churban? Now we have our answer. The Braisa is not necessarily saying that it was.
Because
as it is, we have one detail about Yehoyariv that doesn't fit anyway. So it could be another detail, right? Okay. Rav Ashi says, though, I have a different answer. No. As a matter of fact, Rav Ashi says, you can make it work according to the Chachamim that the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed in the year after Shemitah. We asked if you divide down 421, first by 50, and then by 7, then it doesn't work out. Rav Ashi Amar, Hanach Shis Shni, there were these 6 years after they started building the second Beis Hamikdash, Ad Solik Ezra or Makadish, until Ezra came up from Babel to Eretz Yisrael and was Makadish Eretz Yisrael again, those 6 years, loika choshev, those are not counted towards the years of Shemitah and Yovel. In other words, we were thinking that we have 420 years to work with. No, Rav Ashi is telling us we only have 414, 415, whatever. So therefore, so now it works out because you have to subtract 6 years because we're going to learn now from the Pesukim that there were 6 years from when they started building the second Beis Hamikdash until Ezra came and was Makadesh Eretz Yisrael again and restarted the Shemitah and Yovel. So those 6 years have to be deducted. The same way as by the first Beis Hamikdash we said we deducted 14 years when they were conquering and settling Eretz Yisrael, the same way over here. We have to deduct 6 years before Ezra came along. The Gemara in Megillah, by the way, mentioned the reason why Ezra didn't come originally is because his Rebbe, Baruch Ben Neriah, the Talmud of Yirmiyahu, was still alive Baruch himself was too weak and old to travel to Eretz Yisrael, but Ezra didn't want to leave his Rebbe and stop learning Torah from him, so he had to wait till Baruch passed away, and only then could he come to Eretz Yisrael.
That's what he did.
So therefore, that's why he wasn't there. So altogether, yes. Yeah. So now let's see how it works out from the Pesukim. The Pesuk starts out like this. The Pesuk describes, we talked last week about how the Sora Yehuda of Binyamin got the building of the Beis Mikdash suspended for 18 years because they mastered on the Jews to Kodesh. Anyway, so the Pesuk says, they die in Betilas Avidas Beis Alakonon Dibi Yerushalayim. Then the work of building the house of Hashem in Yerushalayim was interrupted. And until the Pesuk continues, the Gemara is not quoting the end of the Pesuk, but the Pesuk continues until the second year of Daryavash. So they restarted the building in the second year of Daryavash. And then later on, the pasuk says, "V'sheitzi b'isa dina." They finished this house, the Beis Mikdash, ad yom plosa l'yirach Adar, on the third day of Adar. Dihi shnat shis l'malchus Daryavash Malka, which was the sixth year of Daryavash. So in other words, it's 4 years building it. They restarted it in the second year, and they finished it in the sixth. And we learn in a brisa, but also is man the shana haba about the same time next the following year. All Ezra of Golusohim, Ezra left Babel and started coming up to Eretz Yisrael together with the people of his Golus. He brought along with him several hundred people from Babel. So in other words, that was in the seventh year of Daryavash. Because the pasuk says, "Vayavar Yerushalayim b'chodesh hachamishi." Ezra came to Yerushalayim with his group in the fifth month, which is the month of Av. He ashana shviyas b'melach, which is the seventh year of Daryavash. So the next year, the eighth year, which is again 6 years, after they restarted the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash, is when they restarted the count of Shemitah and Yovel.
That was the sixth year after they.
So no. They started again. Daryavash came to the throne. In the second year of Daryavash, the Nevi'im told them it's time to restart building the second Beis Mikdash, and they started, and eventually they got official permission from Daryavash to do that. Then it took them 4 years to finish. That brings us to the sixth year. In the seventh year, Ezra came from Babel. In the eighth year, the Tishrei, after he came in Av. So the following Tishrei, he announced that now we're being Mekadosh Eretz Yisrael again, and we're restarting the count of Shemitah and Yovel. So that means we have 6 years that are deducted. Years 2 through 7 of Daryavash belong to the time of the second Beis Mikdash, but they don't belong to the Shemitah and Yovel count yet. Therefore, instead of 420 years, we have 414 years to work with. And again, according to Rashi and Tosfos, then the Beis Mikdash was destroyed the following year, in the 415th year. So good, according to the Chachamim, 415 divided by 50 gives you 15. 15 divided by 7 gives you a remainder of 1. So Rav Ashi says, therefore, it works out according to the Chachamim as well. Okay. Gufa. Getting back to something we mentioned before, we said before in the Braisa, Shiva also Yovels money Yisrael, Mashinichnas of Oretz Achiyatsu, Vachiyatsu. The Jewish people counted 17 Yovel cycles, not 17 full ones, we said, but you know, at the beginning, they entered into a 17th cycle from when they entered out Yisrael under Yeshua's leadership until they left out Yisrael by the Churban. And the Braisa says, Iyati Yocholom Mashinichnasu Manu. You can't say that they began the Shemitah and Yovel cycles right when they entered. Because she'imata oyma mishnichnas u'manu. Because if you say that they did that, nimta bayis chorav b'tchilas yovel. Again, the Beis Mikdash was destroyed in the 850th year. Would have been destroyed in the year of a yovel. V'iyat the motzav abes roshana ach shalhuksa yerugama. And then Yechezkel's nevuah of the third Beis Mikdash wouldn't have taken place in the year of yovel, which would be when it was 14 years after the churban. So the price it would have been. He prophesied, we said, on Yom Kippur of the year of a yovel. V'rosh Hashanah v'asav achodesh. So it wouldn't work out. But it wouldn't work out that it would have been in a Yovel year, 14 years after the Churban, if the Churban itself took place in a Yovel year. So that's where we say, therefore, the Braisa says that we have to deduct 7 years, that we have to deduct 7 years that they spent conquering most of Eretz Yisrael, and another 7 years that they spent dividing up Eretz Yisrael.
It couldn't have taken 7 years after the...
From when they entered Eretz Yisrael, it took them 7 years to conquer most of Eretz Yisrael. And when they were left, there were still various enclaves and exclaves and whatever, or Knanim, but most of it had been conquered.
Right.
And then after that, they spent the next 7 years dividing up which Shevet gets which portion,
right.
And within that, which family gets which portion within that Shevet territory.
Right.
So that was altogether 14 years, and only when they finished that did they start the Shemitah and Yom Kippur. So the question is, how do we know those figures? Sheva Shekib Shuminolon. How do we know? It took them 7 years to conquer most of Eretz Yisrael. So like this. Dekarma Kolev, we have like this. We had this in Zvachim as well, by the way.
Yeah.
We had this whole calculation. Dekarma Kolev, so Kolev says, when they were finished most of the conquest, and Kolev comes to ask Yeshua to give him the city of Hebron, as we had in last week's parasha, that Moshe had promised it to him, because he went to Hebron and davened by the Kibrei Ovis, and he was loyal among, he and Yeshua were the only loyal ones of the Menaglim. So Kolev... Yeah. Anyway, the Kama Kolev. The Kolev describes the scenario. He says, "Ben Avoyim Shana Onoichi V'Shloach Moshe Eved Hashem Oisi Mikadosh Barnea L'Ragel Asaretz." Remember, I was 40 years old when Moshe Eved Hashem sent me from Kadosh Barnea to spy out of Israel. He was 40 years old when he was sent as a spy. And he continues to Yeshua, but after Hine Anoichi Hayoyim Ben Chomesh Shmoinim Shana. Now he says to Yeshua, I'm 85 years old, and Baruch Hashem, I'm still strong, and I feel I can conquer the giants in Hebron, and therefore please give me that territory. So, how do we get from 40 to 85? V'omamar, now we learn in a blister, Shana Rishona Osa Moshe Mishkan, during the first year that the Jewish people were in the desert, Moshe made the Mishkan, meaning they made all the components of the Mishkan. Shmiya Hukama Mishkan, at the beginning of the second year from Yetzias Mitzrayim, they set up the Mishkan, because it was set up on Aleph Nissan, and the years of Yetzias Mitzrayim begin from Nissan, so it was set up on the first day of the second year from Yetzias Mitzrayim. V'shalach Meraglim, that same year on Choftes Sivan, which is actually a couple of days from now, Moshe sent out the Meraglim. So that was all in the second year. So and then from then until they entered Eretz Yisrael was another 38 years. So if Kolev is describing that he was 40 at the time when they sent the Meraglim, then it means when they entered Eretz Yisrael, Ki'ogur Yarden, when they crossed the Yarden 38 years later, how much is he? 40 plus 38, Kolev bar Kamahavi. How old was Kolev at that point? Bar Tamna Nachi Tauchin. He would have to be 80 minus 2, which is 78 years old. 78, yeah. Kikom Makrib Nachlis, now when they're getting ready to divide up the portions of Eretz Yisrael, and he comes to Yeshua and asks for Hebron to be his portion, Ka'amar, he's saying, Ben Chomesh Hashmoinim Shana Anoski. He says, I'm 85 years old, so another 7 years have passed. Ishtakach, the Sheva Kibshu. So it comes out that they conquered for 7 years. Okay. V'sheva Shechilku Menolon, how do we know that it took them 7 years to divide up Eretz Yisrael after the conquest? So first of all, Iboy is saying the one possibility is you could answer Mida Sheva Kibshu Sheva Choku. Given that we know from these Tukim that it took them 7 years to conquer, we can assume that it also took them 7 years in other words, it's a concept called Lloyd Bach, cost of Listerm El Lafayash. The pasuk doesn't come to obscure things for us, the pasuk comes to clarify things for us. So therefore, if we don't have an exact figure, we can deduce it from a known figure. I also saw an explanation from somebody contemporary who wants to say that what it is. I mean, at the end of the 7 years, again, they hadn't officially finished conquering all of Eretz Yisrael. There were still various enclaves they were planning. But apparently, the idea is once they've spent 7 years on it, then it can be considered it's a done deal already. And the same thing with the chilku. But the point is, in other words, 7 years is like a defined amount of time. Like it can be considered like an, you know, and the same thing, therefore, you could argue that once you have 7 years, dividing it up, and that can already be considered a defined unit of time. And the Ebo is saying, well, or another possibility is if you say that there was a different number of years dividing up the land, then the calculation of Yechezkel and Nevuah wouldn't work out. That we said the only way to make his calculation, the only way to make the dating of his Nevuah work out is to subtract 14 years. So if we know that seven of them were spent conquering, by elimination, it must be that 7 years of them were spent dividing. So therefore, that would be another way. You wouldn't be able to find the calculation. It wouldn't work out that Yechezkel's Nevuah, which again took place in a Yovel year, it wouldn't work out that it was in a Yovel unless you deduct 14 years after the Churban, unless you deduct 14 years when they first came into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, that tells us our 7 years. That's the proof for the 7 years. Okay. Continuing on the theme of our perek, which is minimums and maximums in halacha, we talked in the previous mishnah about the number of players of different instruments, which is what led us into this whole discussion about singing in the Beis Mikdash, and then to this whole discussion of chronology. So now the mishnah says, "Ein person mishisha tloim hamavukarin belishkas tloim." You can never have less than 6 sheep that have been checked for mumim in the Lishka Saploim, in the chamber of lambs, which was one of the chambers in.
Which one was it?
So that was one of the. So you had in the Beis Mikdash, there was a large domed building called the Beis Hamoked. When we learn the Sefer Midas in Tishrei next year, that's the Shem, we'll talk about it. And in that big building, there was a fire in the middle of it to warm up the kohanim, because they walked around barefoot, whatever. Around the sides of it, there were four chambers built into the corners or the sides, whatever. And one of them was the lishkat haploy, the chamber of lambs. So you always had to have a minimum of six lambs in there that had been checked for mumim, kedei l'shabbos u'liyom tovim shor rosh hashanah. Six is because you have to have two for the korban tovim on Shabbos. And suppose, let's say, that the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah come out adjacent to Shabbos. Let's say they come out Sunday and Monday. Nowadays, Rosh Hashanah can't be on Sunday, but in those days it could. So then you also need two for the tovim on the first day, two for the tovim on the second day. So therefore, six.
One in the morning,
one in the afternoon. Yeah. Kedei l'shabbos u'liyom tovim shor rosh hashanah. Umay sif, and there's no maximum. You could have as many sheep in there as you want. Another example, ein posin mishtei chatzotzos, you can't have less than two trumpets in the Beis Hamikdash. And by the way, I mean, we talked the other day about the trumpets, and we talked about that there's a trumpet that the Kohanim blow, but actually, according to the Rambam, there's two different sets of trumpets. There's trumpets that the Kohanim blow, of Nei Aaron HaKohanim Yisgul B'chatzotzos, and then there's other trumpets that are actually part of the orchestra, which just like the Levim are playing the harps, or the Yisraelim, we said, Afi Alach, or whatever, are playing the harps, and or the violins, or whatever it is exactly. So they'd also be playing trumpets, yeah.
So how do you recognize both?
So I guess maybe they had different shapes. One of them might have been more like a trumpet, and the other one more like a tuba. No, lav dafka. In fact, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that seems to imply, and there's also a Mishnah in Kinim that seems to imply that the ones that were played as part of the orchestra may have been made out of animal horns. They may have been somewhat similar to shofars. Yeah, made out of animal horns. Why not? Why not? You can take an animal horn and make a trumpet. Yeah, why not? You could.
Trumpet is big.
Yeah, so an animal horn can also be big. But also, you know, it can be reshaped, it can be have holes punched in it, whatever, yeah. Okay. And besides, I mean, you know, you have various kinds of instruments that are like trumpets also. You know, you have tubas, and you can also have some of them can be made out of horn. Yeah. Okay. Okay. In person, mishtei chatzotzos, so you can't have less than two chatzotzos. Mitisha kinoros, you can't have less than nine kinors. What a kinor is, many people say that it's a violin. Some people say that it's a harp. Whatever, it's apparently some kind of string instrument. Almost sifin ad olam, there's no maximum. You can have as many as you want. Rashi says, why dafka? Can there have to be a minimum of nine kinors? Rashi says, I don't know why. The Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings some psukim and divrei yomim that imply, and some of the achronim say the basic idea would be in order because the chachamim figured out that way it sounds best. When you have fewer than that, it doesn't sound so good. Yeah. Okay.
What is it more likely to be?
It could be a harp, or it could be a harp or a violin. I don't know. In modern Hebrew, kino means a violin, but you always talk about the famous kino that was hanging over David's bed, and everybody always pictures it as a harp or a lyre or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. Almost sifin ad olam, there's no maximum. You can have as many kinoros as you want. That's tziltzol levad. There's only one tziltzol. Mm-hmm. Rashi translates tziltzol as symbols, right? The Tosfos Yom Tov brings, I mentioned a few days ago, a sefer called Shilte HaGiborim from one of the early Achronim in Italy, who talks about all the music of the Beis Hamikdash. He explains that the tziltzol may have been some other kind of thing. It was some kind of instrument like a tuba, but you move parts of it, trombone, that was the word, right. So he wants to say that the tziltzol is a trombone. Thank you. I'd forgotten the name of it. Okay. Anyway. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? You only need, when the first part of the Mishnah says you need six sheep for Rosh Hashanah, if Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah are adjacent, so what do you mean? Tmidin and Mustaf and Tuvahavu. You have many animals that are needed for the Talmud and the Musa. You have much more than six. If you have Shabbos alone, you need four. So two for the Tmidim, two for the Mustafim. Rosh Hashanah, you have seven for the Korban Mustaf. So what do you mean? Six is not going to be enough for those 3 days. The answer is no. Tana ba'almapoi, the Tana is talking generically, that he's saying throughout the year you always have to have a minimum of six. Ba'atzmidin l'chudekoi, he's just talking about the animals that you need for the korban tamid. He's not dealing with the animals that you need for the musafim.
Other
korbanos. Umay, kedei l'shabbos, or the yom tovim. So why did he mention that you need enough for Shabbos and for Yom Tov? Simona ba'alma, he's just using that as a simon. says that you can remember that's supposed to be 6. It helps you remember that 6 is the number that you would need for the Tumidim for Shabbos and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah adjacent. The Halkakama.
6 is 4 for Shabbos.
1 second, listen. The Halkakama, what it means is like this. Ein Pochsin Mishisha Ployim HaMavokorim, you can't have less than 6 sheets that have been checked from women, the Lushka Saployim, in the Lushka Saployim, and they have to be checked out by Yomim Kodim Shchita. They have to be checked for 4 days before they're shechted. So Rashi brings 2 explanations over here. First, he explains from his Rebbeim, what it means is like this. So let's say, for example, forget about Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah for a second. He said we're just using that as a simon. Let's say, for example, on Sunday, you start off with 6 sheets in there. You take 2 of them for the Tumidim, you put in 2 instead. You're going to start then, so the 2 that you're going to be makir on Sunday, you checked all of last, you checked the half of last week, beginning Thursday of last week. The ones that you're going to be makir on Monday again also. So eventually the 2 that you put in on Sunday, you're going to be checking them on Monday, on Tuesday, and on Wednesday. And then you're going to be makir them on Wednesday. So they're actually Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That's what it means. This is Rashi's explanation from this Rebbeim. You're going to take 2, you're going to put 2 new ones in, you're going to check 2 of them, put them in on Sunday. They're going to be there Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, and you're going to check on each of those days. Wednesday, you're going to bring them for the topic. So therefore, you're always going to have 6 in there, and then you have, in other words, so on Sunday, for example, so a pool of 6, right, of which, yeah. So 2 of them were put in today, 2 of them were put in yesterday, and 2 of them, yeah. Rashi says that I don't like that explanation because the Gemara is going to explain over here that we're following the opinion of Ben Bagbag. This is the famous Ben Bagbag from Tirtei Avos, from Far Agra, that was Ben Hey, actually, whatever, Ben Bagbag, yeah. Anyway. Anyway, he learns that you have to check the animals for korbanos 4 days in advance. He says we learn it from the korban Pesach and Mitzrayim, which they had to buy on the 10th of Nisan, and they checked it on the 14th. But that means 4 days exclusive of the day they bought it. There you have. They bought it on the 10th, and they're checking it 11, 12, 13, and 14. Yeah, so how does that work with the calculation over here? Rashi says it doesn't. So therefore, he disagrees with that explanation of his Rebbeim. He says what it means is you have over there, it means that you never have less than 6 in there. When you take the 2 for that day, you have 6 that are left over in there. Later on that day, they'll bring in 2 more. So again, in our scenario over here, according to Rashi, so in other words, according to Rashi's Rebbeim, what it is, let's say when you take out the 2 that you're going to need for Sunday, at that point for a while, you only have 4 in there. And then later in the day, you're going to bring another 2. Now Rashi is saying that, no, you have 8 in there, so you take out 2. So for most of the day, you're only going to have 6 in there. Later in the day, you're going to bring in 2 more, and you're going to check them. And then again, you're going to check them Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And
the minimum
So at any time during the day, the minimum you're going to have is 6, right? Yeah. Umani ben Bagbagi. So which opinion would this follow? This would follow the opinion of Ben Bagbag. Depending, we learn a price. And Ben Bagbag, minayin l'tomet chiton vikar abo yamim kodim shkita. How do we know that the korban tomet has to be checked for mumim for at least 4 days before it's shechted? Talmud lema tishmeru l'hakud v'gamayadai. The pasuk says about the korban tomet, you should guard it to offer it to me in its proper time. So it uses the word guarding. By the korban pesach, it says v'hoyo l'cham l'mishmeres. It should be something that you guard. Adabah protected. Adabah is the mechodesh rishon azeh. And until the 14th of this month, and then you shecht it. Ma l'halam ton biker abo yom korban shchita. So just like in Mitzrayim, when they bought the animals on Yud Nisan, they had to then check them on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, and then they shecht them on the 14th. So also over here, every korban tomet has to be checked for 4 days in advance. So according to Ben Bagbag, that's why you need a minimum number of ployim in the Lishkas HaPloyim, otherwise you don't have enough time to check them.
They applied, in other words, the korban pesach to the korban.
Because we learn from Avdei Shabbat, from the word Mishmeres and Tishmeru, yeah. That's according to Ben Bagbag, right? Dekanami, in fact, the Gemara says, yeah, you can see from the wording of the Mishnah that the Mishnah is not saying that it's because you actually need that number for Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah adjacent, that it's just using it as a siman. Dekatoni kidei l'Shabbos, because the Mishnah just says enough for Shabbos and for the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. But like Katoni l'Shabbos, it doesn't say that you need them for Shabbos and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. In other words, the Mishnah is just telling us here's a handy way to remember that you're always going to have 6, because it's easy to remember that 6 is the number of animals you need for the Tumidim on Shabbos and then Sunday and Monday being Rosh Hashanah.
You need 4 on Shabbos?
No, you need 2 on Shabbos for the Tumidim. You're ignoring them with stuff.
One in the morning, one in the afternoon.
One in the morning on the first day of Rosh Hashanah and one in the afternoon. One in the morning, that's 4, and one in the morning and one in the afternoon on the second day of Rosh Hashanah is 6. So that helps you remember. In other words, the Mishnah is not telling you that you need six of them because you need enough to cover you for Shabbos in the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah is using that as a handy way to remember. That this way you don't think by mistake. Four or five, you can remember to yourself how many kmidim are there on Shabbos and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Six. Then we said in the Mishnah, Mishtei Chatzotzos and Mesifin Chola, we said that in the Mishnah that you can't have less than two trumpets in the Mishnah Mikdash. And we said, Mesifin Ad Olam, we said that you can add as much as you, we said, at least two trumpets and at least nine kinnotos, and you can add as much as you want. So Va'ad Kama, the Gemara asks, what's the actual maximum? Now, why does the Gemara assume that there's a maximum? It said Ad Olam. So Tosfos says 2 weeks. Number one, the Tosfos says, the question would be like this. We know that, fine, the minimum number of Chatzotzos is two. It would be a Hidur Mitzvah to have more than that. The first answer in Tosfos is that the Gemara is asking, what's the maximum that's considered a Hidur Mitzvah? We're beyond that, you have to be, in other words, there's no maximum according to that explanation. In other words, if you want to have, let's say, 200 people blowing, fine. But beyond a certain number, the Gemara is going to say 120, you don't need to look for more people. It's not at any greater hidder to have 121 than it is 120. That's Tosfos' first explanation. Tosfos' second explanation is the Gemara assumes there has to be a maximum. So the fact of the matter is, you have too many chatzotzos, it's just going to drown out everything else. So therefore, the Gemara assumes that there has to be a maximum number of chatzotzos. So what, even though the Mishnah says ad olam, it doesn't mean literally that you can have, it doesn't mean you can have 1,000 chatzotzos. It means that you can, yeah. So how many? Amar Rav Huna, va'amrilo, Amar Rav Zavdi, Amar Rav Huna, ad meya ve'esrim, up to 120. Again, according to the first explanation in Tosfos, you could have more than that, but only up to that is considered Hidur Mitzvah. Beyond that, there's no greater Hidur Mitzvah than having 121st. And according to Tosfos' second explanation, that is the actual maximum that you can have. You're not supposed to have more than that, because then it'll get. Shenema, as we find in the Pasuk, in Divrei Hayomim, when it's described by the Chanukah Sabayis, it says, V'imoim koinim l'meyev esrim machatzim machatzotzim. With them, with the Levi'im, who are playing instruments, there are koinim, the 120 of them, playing on the chatzotzim. So we see that the Pasuk mentions 120 koinim. And again, according to Tosfos' first explanation, obviously, Shlomo would have wanted to make as much of a Hidur Mitzvah as possible when he's doing the Chanukah Sabayis. So we see there's no greater Hidur Mitzvah than 120. And according to Tosfos' second explanation, he maxed out 120 because you're not supposed to have more.
So
I'm not sure with that many 20 trumpets. Okay. Then we said Metisha Kinodas Bakola, we said you can't have less than 9 kinodas, violins or harps or lyres or whatever. Batsiltalabad, the
lyre?
Lyres is another possibility. A lyre is similar to a harp, it's shaped a little bit differently. But anyway. The tziltzolabad, but you only have one tziltzol. Again, Rashi over here translates tziltzol as a symbol, and according to the other explanation from Shultag Devodim, it was a trombone. Anyway, you only have one of those. The menahanimili, how do we know that? Amr of Asi, ja'omakro, because you have a pasuk also in Divrei Hayomim that says, v'osaf bim tziltayim mashmiya, or mashmiya, actually. Osaf was making a sound with the tziltzol, with the mitziltayim. So the question is, what do you mean? Mitzoltayim Shreyav. Mitzoltayim is a dual, so it means there were two of them. So that means there should be two of them. What do you mean only one?
Yeah.
The answer is kiven dechoda avid to avi, because they both work together. Whether we're talking about cymbals or a trumpet, yeah, they work together. You don't play one cymbal by itself. You don't have a trombone, you don't use one piece of it by itself. V'chad gavra avid bohu, and it's all one person using both pieces. Kori lohu chad calls it one. In other words, it's one of those things. You need both pieces together in order to, they work together to as one musical instrument. Yeah. So that's what the Mishnah means, that there's only one of them. Mishnah says, Ein poichsim b'shneim osa levi'im omdim al ha'duchan. You can't have less than 12 levi'im standing on the duchan, singing. Almost different. Ad olam, and you can add as many as you want. There's no maximum of levi'im that are standing there and singing.
Are we going to say the same thing as before?
No, the pashto's not. Another deen. Eina katan nichnas la azara la avoida. A katan cannot come in to the azara for the avoida. Ela b'shar shalavim omrim bashir. Only when levim are speaking and singing the music, which means so Rashi explains like this. It means like this. Let's say, for example, a Levi who's a child wants to come into the azara and help with one of the avoidas. He wants to open or close the doors. He wants to sweep the azara or whatever. He can only do it when the Levi'im are standing on the Duchan and singing, and then he can come in and join them in the singing.
Really? Why is that?
that we're going to see in the Gemara. We have a policy for it. The Rambam has a...
We
have to be a Levi Miyochad. So according to Rashi, what the Mishnah is telling us is that if a child, a Levi, wants to join in, he can only join in when the Levim are singing. That's the only avodah he can do in the Mishnah. He can't be sweeping or opening the goat or opening and closing the gates or whatever. The Rambam has a whole different understanding of this. The Rambam understands he's talking about the Kohen. When a young Kohen, the Rambam understands, we don't mean young as in below Bar Mitzvah. We mean a Kohen, the first time he's coming to do the Avodah, the only time he can come, the Rambam mentions in principle he could do the Avodah when he's 13. In practice, they would usually not allow him until he's 20. But whatever, when he first comes in to do the Avodah, the Rambam learns, the Mishnah is telling us he can only do it when the Levim are singing. That's when he's allowed to come in and do his Avodah for the first time. The Rambam says that's what the Mishnah means over here. The Ravid sharply argues with the Rambam and says the toast zola. It's a big mistake for the Rambam to understand it that way, but that's the Rambam's understanding. Okay. And one reason is the noise of Caleb on the Rambam's sake, because the fact is the Mishnah uses the word avoida. It's a koyanim, do the avoida, the levim don't do avoida. Okay. Anyway, so that's why the Rambam learns that it has to be talking about a koyanim. Fine. The loy hoyo omen benevel of a chiner, these children, would not be singing or playing the navel or the kinner, el of a pair, they would only be doing vocal singing. Could they listen to Val Ban Imma in order to give a flavor in the singing? Because the kids' voices harmonize and then come out beautifully. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Ein Olam L'Minyan, Ve'Ein Olam L'Duchan. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that these Katanim don't count towards the minimum of 12 Levim, only the ones, as we said before, you have to have 12 Levim. The children don't count to that. The Ein Olam L'Duchan, they wouldn't actually go up on the Duchan, on the platform where the Levim are standing. Ela Ba'orah Tel Yo'omnin, rather they would stand on the ground. V'roshehen Ben Ragli Alevim, their heads would be between the feet of the Levim, because the Levim are standing. Well, in other words, the Levim are standing on a high platform, so the kids are standing on the ground near them. V'tsa'arei HaLevim Hoyu Nikurin. These children are called Tsa'arei HaLevim. Tsa'arei literally means the ones who trouble the Levim, and we'll see why in the Gemara.
And they are dead.
No, Levim, we're talking about children of Levim.
Children of Levim.
Right. Again, the Rambam has a different understanding of this part of the Mishnah. He understands that the Mishnah is not talking, this part is not talking specifically about the children. It's talking about whoever is playing the instrument. But they're not standing on the Duchan, and they don't count towards the 12. They stand on the ground. The Levim who are singing stand on the Duchan, and the people who are playing on the instrument stand on the ground near. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Hani Keneged Mi. We say in the Mishnah that you need to have at least 12 Levim on the Duchan. What does that correspond to? I'm going to Papa, Keneged Tisha Kinodas of Shnei Nevalim Betzil Tzalechon. It corresponds to, in the previous Mishnah, we said you have to have at least nine violins and two Nevalim, which again, Rashi understands that the Nevalim is a bagpipe, and another explanation is it's a lute, and another, whatever, there's a few different explanations of what it is. Betzil Tzalechon and one Tzil, symbol of trombone, as the case may be. So 9 plus 2 plus 1 is 12. As you have in Divrei HaYomim, it describes over there the families, it describes over there how you have 24 main singers in the Beis Mikdash, where each, just like you had 24 Mishmaros of Kohanim, you had 24 Mishmaros of Levim, and each one was accompanied by his children and his brothers, making up a total of 12. So we see that there was a minimum of 12 for each group. Okay. We said a cotton nichnas la'azora la'avoda el b'shar shalavim. We said a cotton can only come in for the avoda only when the levim are singing. Again, according to Rashi, it means that when a child levi comes to this mikdash, the only thing you can do is join in the singing. You can't do any other avoda. According to the Rambam, it would mean that when a young kohen is coming to do the avoda for the first time, he has to come in when the levim are singing. Menahani, where do we know this from? Amar Rabbi Yochanan do amakra. You have a pasuk in Ezra describing the scene when they were starting to build the second Beis Mikdash, Vayamid Yeshua, Bonavachov, Yeshua, who was the Kohen Gadol, stood over there with his sons and his brothers, Kadmiel, Uvanov, and Kadmiel, who was a Levi, and his sons, Bnei Yehuda, and the sons of Yehuda, who was another Levi, Ke'echad, they're all standing together, Lenaseach al literally means to supervise, but it also means Moloshim Lamnaseach, like the conductor, to conduct the music when they're doing the work in the house of Hashem. In other words, they're playing and they're singing and playing music while the Beis Hamikdash is being founded and while they're sorting the avodah of the korban. And
Lenaseach means
to conduct the music. So we see, in other words, the point is that it mentions that they had bonov, that each by each one of them it says bonov, his children, and b'nei Yehuda ke'echad, implying that the bonim, the children, can only be coming in to join in the singing, not any other avodah. Then we said, we said that these children are not playing the navel or the kinner, they're just singing vocals. They're not allowed to play with the navel or the kinner, only vocally. But there's a different explanation also, I think it's also from the Rambam, I don't remember, that what it means is the Levim who are singing are not also playing instruments. You're not going to have, like, you know, Lahavdil nowadays. You have some musicians who both sing and play at the same time. They're not doing that. They're only singing because you want them to focus on their singing. You know? Okay. Anyway, so the question is, we mentioned the navel and the kinner. So the question is, l'meimra de navel l'chud b'kinner l'chud. So you're telling me, therefore, it's a statement, l'meimra. So that tells us the navel l'chud b'kinner l'chud. Apparently, the Mishnah is telling us that navel and kinner are two different instruments. The question is, lema masnis in the lake of Rabbi Yehuda. Would we have to say that our Mishnah does not go like Rabbi Yehuda? When we say that, which Rabbi Yehuda seems to imply, it's the same thing. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, kinner shal mikdash shal shivas nimin haya. The kinner, again, the violin or harp or whatever it is in the Mishnah, had seven strings. Shenema soivas smachot es panecha. As the Pasuk says in Tilim, being satisfied with one thing, of happiness in your presence. I'll take soiva el sheva. Don't mean soiva, but rather sheva, seven. So there's seven when there's simcha of the singing and the music in your presence. V'sholimoza Mashiach shmona. The one in the times of Mashiach will have eight swings, which one explanation means, by the way, I mean, nowadays we have, there are seven major notes in an octave. So when Mashiach comes, there's going to be a whole different type of music that we're going to discover. That's where you're going to have eight notes in an octave.
How is that possible?
I don't know how it's possible, but the Limos of Mashiach. Shinema lam natseach ala shminis, as the passage says, also in Chilim, for the conductor on the shminis, implying al nima shminis, on the eighth note. One idea, okay, one second. V'shal olam abba eser. And the one of olam abba, which is beyond the times of Mashiach, eser, will have 10 strings. Shenema, as the positive says, I'll lay off.
10 notes?
I guess. Shenema, as the positive says, I'll lay oser v'alei novel on the oser, the 10-stringed instrument, v'alei novel, and on the navel, I'll lay higoyon v'chiner, with contemplation on the kinner.
We say it
every Shabbos, yeah. But oh, when you have another pasuk in Tehillim, hodu also on Shabbos, hodu Hashem the kinner, thank Hashem with the kinner, b'nevel also zamri loy, sing to him with a navel of 10 strings, shir loy shir chadash, sing to him a new song. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda starts by saying kinner shal mikdash, but then he's bringing psukim that mention the navel as having 10 strings. So apparently, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the kinner and the navel are the same thing. The symbolism of this, by the way, is, in many of the Mekoshim talk about, it's also brought in any number of places in Siddurs. Nowadays, we live in a natural world, and the natural world is defined by the number seven, beginning from the fact that Hashem created the world in 7 days. Whereas Yemos HaMashiach, you have the eight always represents beyond nature, which is why, for example, Hanukkah is 8 days. And then Yemos HaMashiach, we're going to have the full revelation, we're going to have the full revelation of the Likus, all the way to 10 strings representing the 10 spheres. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, going back to this, again, Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning the kinner in the Bismarck, especially when he's bringing psukim that refer to the navel. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, apparently they're the same thing. Our Mishnah mentions not the navel and not the kinner, seems to be not like Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is, afilu tamer Rabbi Yehuda. You could after all say that the Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda also. Or Mishnah, because la'olam abba, because you could say like this, Rabbi Yehuda would explain like this, in olam abba, I did an efficient nimin didei because the kinner then is going to have 10 strings. It's going to have many more strings, unlike now where it only has 7. Nafish kole, therefore it's going to have a much different, a much greater sound. Nafish means more. It's going to have a greater sound, a greater range of sound. Keen navel, it's going to be in that sense like a navel, which has a wider range of sound now. Therefore, korule navel, therefore the posset calls it a navel.
Navel is strictly speaking.
What? According to Rashi, navel means something like bagpipe.
Yeah, but there's a shurish.
The word navel means a wineskin.
Wine.
Because again, according to Rashi, the reason is because it's shaped like a bag. Like a bagpipe. Yeah, again, you have other explanations. The Shilta Gibordim explains that it's a lute. which is a stringed instrument, a little bit like a violin. They play it in Middle Eastern music nowadays. There's another explanation that the navel is another explanation that the navel is a harp. In modern Hebrew, navel means a harp. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda would say when Rabbi Yehuda is not equated. Okay, but they don't. Okay, whatever. But okay, but the point is they still play. It still plays the seven notes of the octave. It doesn't play the expanded octave that we're talking about. Okay, anyway, the point is Rabbi Yehuda is not saying that the navel and the kinnor are the same thing. He's saying the kinnor of Yemos HaMashiach will have a greater range of sound, so it'll be like a navel is now. Fine. Then we finish off. Rabbi Lezim and Yaakov in Olam Min HaMinyan. We said Rabbi Lezim and Yaakov says that the children don't count, or the ones who are playing the instruments don't count towards the 12. They stand on the ground, and they're called Sarei Halavim.
Min HaMinyan?
What?
Ein
Olam Min HaMinyan. They don't count towards the 12 Levim, towards the minimum of 12 Levim that they have to be on the door. So the Mishnah had said that they're called Sarei Halavim. We learn in a Braisa a little differently. The Soyade Halavim Hoyunikroin. They're called the assistants of the Levim. So that we can understand why they're called the assistants, because they assist with the singing and with the instruments. The Tanadidan, so why does our Tana of our Mishnah use the word Sare?
Yeah.
So like this, Kivin Dahani Kotin Kalayu, because the children have high voices. Vahani of Kalayu, whereas the adults have deeper voices. Hani Makapati, so the children are able to sing very high, thin notes. Vahani Loi Makapati, the adults are not able to reach such high notes. Korilu, Sari, therefore they're called Sari, like they cause pain and trouble for the adults, but the adults wish that they had that kind of vocal range. Again, according to the explanation that we're talking about over here, the ones who are playing the music, which is an Amman explanation, what it means is it bothers the Levim in a sense, like their beautiful singing is being overshadowed by the music from the instruments. Anyway, that's why the Mishnah calls them
Sari.
The Levim are singing. Meanwhile, you have the Yisraelim, we said before, according to one opinion, the Avodim or whatever, are playing the instruments, and like the Levim, who are singing, feel bad. Like their singing is being overshadowed by the instruments, and therefore they're called Sari.
They want to Whereas
in the price, it's called them Soyadei Halavim, because the fact is they're helping out. They're helping to make it beautiful. Yeah. Okay. Hadron Aloch Einan Erev.